Welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, bringing the tales and stories of the ancient Celts to your fireside.
Special Episode 30, The Albion Interview.
Welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show. I'm Gary.
And I'm Ruth. This is going to be a fun show, because we're going to a lovely pub in Sussex to meet folk musician Dave the Bard and film director Gary Andrews, so we can talk about the new film The Spirit of Albion, which premieres in 3 days after the show goes live.
Ah, that's right. Mm-hmm. And a great interview it was too.
It certainly was.
Mm. We're also going to bring you a couple of pieces of great music to help us celebrate Beltane, because summer is just around the corner for us.
Yay!
And for those in the Southern Hemisphere who are gathering the harvest in, we tip our hats to you by playing the music of one of your top bands to help us do it. Happy Lunasa to you guys.
Yes, happy Lunasa. So let's kick off with some news and views.
Good idea.
Now, I've been hearing a lot just recently about Flag Fen. What's that all about then?
Well, Flag Fen is the most amazing Bronze Age site, situated just outside Peterborough, roughly in the middle of the UK. Dates back to about 1300 BCE, and is the site of a lake village. It has causeways, wooden Celtic roads, going across the marshes, and there's evidence of a platform built over the water.
Really? That's fascinating. I know we had a place like that locally as well, didn't we?
We did, that's right. Mm.
Well, we know that places that were in between places, such as between land and sea, like on the marshes here, were considered sacred to the Celts.
Yes, just like the turning points of the seasons were in between points in time.
So they might have built dwellings or sacred structures on these platforms.
Absolutely.
Mm.
And there's evidence of votive offerings or gifts to the gods in the water by the platform right up into the Iron Age. It's a huge site, and it's the largest causeway in Europe. Sadly, because of nearby developments and the drainage of the fens, the archaeological remains that are being looked after by a charity called Vivacity at the moment are beginning to decay, and they reckon that within 20 years we will have lost this amazing site to history.
Now that is sad. I mean, they have a museum there housing the oldest wheel in England, a special hall preserving some of the timbers so that we can see them above ground and a roundhouse for visitors to see. But future generations will have lost the chance to have learned anything new.
Yeah, that's right. It's all drying out. So a group called Dig Ventures is setting up a sponsorship program to fund as much archaeological research and rescue work as can possibly be done before we lose it. The idea is that if you sponsor them, you get something back for your money.
So how does that work then?
Well, for a minimum donation, you get backstage access to a website called The Site Hut, where you get up-to-the-minute news on any finds the new dig makes, a final archaeological PDF report at the end of the dig, and an invitation to attend the end-of-dig party.
Wow.
The more you donate, the more goodies you'll receive. Right up to 2-week on-site training in archaeological fieldwork, camping on-site amongst the roundhouses. For companies, they'll even tailor special promotions.
That sounds really good. I wish we could have donated a little more.
Yes, me too. But every little helps, and they have over half of what they need already. They've just over a month to raise the other half of the cash they need to fund the work.
Okay, folks, so if you want to get your trousers involved in some serious Celtic research, now is your chance to get in the trench and rescue as much of the site as we can for future generations.
Let's hope they raise all the money they need before May the 30th,
mm-hmm.
And then everything they've planned can go ahead.
Yes, I'm glad we're involved. It would be fun to go on site and explore with the rest of the team, wouldn't it?
I'd love that. Mm. I'd love that. Mm. Full details will be in the show notes, of course. Should we have some music now, though, before we bring you to the main feature?
Yes, I thought it would be nice to play Spiral Dance's wonderful song, Weaving the Summer, to celebrate Beltane for us and Lunasa for our friends down under.
Hmm, good idea.
Hail to the summer! Hail to the summer, the season that drives the cold winter away. Hail to the summer, hail to the summer, light your bonfire, today is Beltane.
High on Mount Caban, we look down on Talking Land. The mist rolls away, catch the sun on the sea. The ring of the morris bells brings on the May morning. Set free your spirit, come dance up the dawn.
Hail to the summer, hail to the summer, the season that drives the cold winter away. Hail to the summer, hail to the summer, light your bonfire, today is Beltane.
Down west in Padstow, the wee ass spins round and round, fired by the teaser who's calling him on. The rhythm of the drums in the hills up above the town brings out the people for dancing and song.
High on Mount Caban, we look down on Talking Land. The mist rolls away, catch the sun on the sea. The ring of the morris bells brings on the May morning. Set free your spirit, come dance up the dawn. Hail to the summer, hail to the summer, the season that drives the cold winter away. Hail to the summer, hail to the summer, light your bonfire, today is Beltane.
Spiral Dance with Weaving the Summer from their album The Quickening.
Now let's have to listen to the great interview with Dave the Bard and film director Gary Andrews about the film The Spirit of Albion, the movie.
Okay, quiet on the set, please.
Okay, and stand by. And action.
We're at the Giant's Rest, which is a beautiful English country pub at the foot of the Sussex Downs, which is only a couple of giant strides away from the chalk figure of the Long Man of Wilmington, who's looking down over us. And with us to chat about the Spirit of Albion movie, we have two very special guests. Co-author of the play The Spirit of Albion, performed at the Archway Theatre Young Adult Workshop, which he runs, actor in Macbeth, Twelfth Night and The Merchant of Venice films, as well as acting on stage in well over 50 shows. How'd you find the time? Including Amadeus, The Crucible and Nicholas Nickleby, Gary Andrews has also appeared in musicals, such as Oliver and Cabaret, as well as writing and directing plays for the young adults. He's a renowned storyboard artist and animator, whose work we've seen in the popular children's series Fireman Sam, which he now directs. Having the experience of several short films already under his belt, he's now taken the massive leap into authoring and directing the feature film, The Spirit of Albion, the movie. We'd like to welcome Gary Andrews.
Hello.
Hi, Gary.
Hello. Hi, Gary.
Cheers.
And we also have with us the renowned pagan folk musician Dave the Bard, who is now cheering, I might add.
No ego, Dave.
Who has no less than 6 best-selling albums to his name, tours across the States and Australia, as well as around the UK. He's also one of the best-known public faces of the Order of Bards, Obeites and Druids, or OBOD as it's known. He's also a druid and has been recognised for his achievements by OBOD by being named their Pendragon, one of the few officers in that order. And amongst the podcast community, possibly best known as the dulcet tones behind Druidcast, the OBOD podcast. Welcome, Dave.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Dave.
Right,
thanks to both of you for coming to meet us today.
You're very welcome.
It's a pleasure.
It's always good to come to the Giant's Rest.
Yes, it's a wonderful
Especially as they have Doombar on, which I don't know, and Kerry's driving back.
What's Doombar?
Doombar? Oh, it's a Cornish beer.
Celtic beer.
No wonder you came along. He was quite happy to bring you, was he?
So what you listeners can't tell is that with us we have the beautiful Kerry Lee, Dave's wife. Kerry, would you like to say hello?
Hello. I'm just the driver.
So guys, let's talk about the film.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
It's officially finished. Yes. You must both be very excited about it.
Yeah, Dave.
Yes, in text speak, OMFG. Which I can say on a family show. Yes, exactly.
OMFG.
Yes.
He's very excited, is what that means.
Yes.
No, I'm very, very excited about it. I can't believe it.
Yes, it's been a long journey, but we're there, and I was talking to Joy, my wife, who's the editor as well, and we put all the stuff, I mean, talk about up to the wire, we put the stuff on the drive on Sunday night, and we were delivering on Monday morning to the
And this is to the people that are going to make the DVD?
Yeah. So, about 8 hours before I was due to leave the house, we finally put the stuff onto the drive after our last little tiny fiddle. And then on Monday morning, Joy turned around and said to me, I actually don't know what to do right now, I feel a bit weird. Knowing that she's going to go out there and just tinker a bit more. So it's gone, it's like our baby has grown up and left home. And now we're just waiting for the police to phone. So
I understand there's a lot of extras going on with the film as well.
There certainly are.
What can we expect?
You can expect the film itself, which is about an hour and a half long, just under an hour and a half. You've got 2 commentary tracks. There's one with Joy and myself talking about the filmmaking, the technical side of the filmmaking, and all the little challenges and things that came along route. And there's a second commentary with myself and Dave, where we speak about the writing of the film and the songs and the sort of stories behind the songs and that kind of stuff.
Which was really great to sit down and do.
This is one of the things we want to talk to you about today.
And on top of that, you've also got a 25-minute making-of documentary, which was made by Mark, who's shot all the online.
This is Mark filming English. Directs,
Mark English. Yep. MEV. Shout out for Mark.
Yep. Notes.
He's done a new making-of that is 90% new stuff you won't have seen before. Even if you've seen all the stuff online, most of this is new.
Exciting.
And there's also a 7-minute blooper reel of some of the things that went wrong in the film.
Brilliant.
That is a little bit kind of there is a language warning in that.
Okay.
Jolly good, righto.
Yeah. So yeah, there we go.
You know, you should really just relax. Press save, switch off the computer, and mingle. Mingle.
So, Dave, how does it feel that all these people are suddenly going to be hearing your songs? And not only that, but as part of a film, it must be a fairly weird feeling.
It's very unreal, because I think a good number of them probably won't have even heard the songs before. It will be new. So they'll be hearing the film's version of the song and then listening to mine as covers. Do you know what I mean?
I prefer the original.
Yes, I prefer
that's
the original
strange
movie.
Feeling.
Yes. So it's you know, I'm really excited about the whole thing. It's all still a bit unreal, and I think until, I think this probably might be the same for Gary, but until the physical DVD is in my hands, I can barely believe it's actually going to be.
I'm with you on that. It all seems so. It's something that's in creation until.
There's this strange feeling. I mean, I'm going to see. But before this week is out, we're recording this about 2 weeks before the release. Exactly 2 weeks before the release of the DVD, and before this week is out, I will be seeing a screening approval copy of the DVD. They'll be sending me a copy to make sure it's all okay. So I'll see an advanced copy before this week is out, and I'm still finding that quite hard to get. But I still think even then, it won't feel quite the same until the night of the premiere.
Yeah.
I think.
Are we still on schedule for a 1st of May release?
We are totally on schedule for
excellent.
That. Excellent. The only thing that could stop that happening is if the DVD duplication place broke down.
Yeah. Which is not going to happen.
Which is not going to happen because they're very professional people in Soho in London, and that's what they do day in, day out. So, no, I was up there all day yesterday with them, sort of going through all the details, and it's all looking good.
And another question our listeners are really eager to know: what parts of the world will be able to watch this DVD?
Every single sausage in the world can watch this.
We've there you got go, folks. You've doing, heard it from the man himself.
Only if you're a sausage. Like.
Yep. Sausages only. But you can be...
I qualify.
You can be a vegan sausage if you wish. Yes, it's basically right. We're having two versions done. We're having an NTSC version for the American market, and we're having a region-free PAL version for the rest of the world, which basically means anyone can see it.
That's excellent.
It's even got a V on it, so it is suitable for vegetarians.
It is really? Definitely.
If you happen to want
to unfortunately, the film does contain nuts.
Oh, no.
So if you're allergic to nuts, well, I'm sorry, but you're not watching it.
But it doesn't have to be this way, George. There's good in everyone. I'm sure of it.
Anyway.
Yes.
So, Dave, what was it like watching people singing your songs, watching other people singing your songs? How did that feel? Was that strange?
Did you feel a sense of loss to that?
Did you feel like your babies have moved on?
No, because I actually wrote my songs originally.
Yes.
When I was writing the songs and Spiral Castle hadn't even been formed. I went to it was 1995, I went to my first kind of pagan Wiccan camp. It's a camp that cannot be mentioned because it's an invite-only camp that you know, still goes to this day. And I could mention it, but then someone will come
would
along
have to kidnap me.
Exactly.
And you do realise we are now going to get 20,000 emails.
That's right. But I went to this camp as a helper, and I heard these beautiful chants around the campfire, and it was fantastic. But after the third night of the chants, I started to think, wouldn't it be really nice if we had songs to sing around campfires in the pagan community? So I kind of, that was my thrust from the word go, was just to write songs that I could give to the community as songs, you know, that we could all sing Newland Salts, the Spirit of Albion, that kind of thing. So you know, hearing these songs sung by other people is exactly
your aim.
My aim.
Ah.
You know, that was always what it was. You know, every now and again on YouTube, a different band in the States or Australia will come up singing one of my songs, and that is exactly what
that's always about
in the first.
Which is brilliant, and of course, when you do concerts and stuff, everybody knows all the words.
That's right.
And sings along with you.
Yeah. What I did find strange, and it was on the first get together, really. I set up all the recording equipment around Gary's house, and the actors and actresses came in to sing their parts. But their meter, their delivery of the song, was so different to mine in places that I thought, oh, maybe we should stop this and go back, you know. But what I didn't realise, and what Gary explained and they explained, is that a lot of them knew what they would be doing at the point of delivery of the lyric.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I see. So fitting in with the role.
So they were fitting in with the role
of
the acting of the song.
Right.
So, and it was those points where I thought, well, that was a bit weird. But when it's actually dropped into the film, it makes all makes sense. Yeah. You know, it's like you know, Gary's delivery of Green and Grey was sung in a West Country accent, and when I heard that and recorded it, I thought, well, that's a bit weird. But once you see the priest singing,
it
absolutely
all fits in.
Makes sense. You see,
absolutely.
And so that was the weird thing, because they were different voices singing those songs on that day. Yeah,
amazing.
Mm.
Gary, going back some years. Sorry, Do you
want to
say something?
No, not at all. No, that's fine.
No, it's just the thought of going back.
Yeah, going back a few years. Yeah, just sort of, you know. Yeah. Okay. Ooh, okay. Yeah.
You want one of those whirly whirly noises, don't we?
Yeah. That's the one.
You don't even need sound effects, they bring them out.
Picture, if you will.
Ruth, you're working with professionals.
Very good.
You
know?
You once made a 12-minute movie.
Oh, I did.
Called Noon of the Solstice.
Oh, my lordy lord. Someone's been
about
doing
a teacher
research.
Talking to her children.
Yes.
And this involved Spiral Castle, didn't it?
And the Forest Gods. And so, how much did that film influence The Spirit of Albion? Because it's a very similar theme, isn't it?
It is. Well, it's actually very interesting. That was part of a filmmaking challenge that was set by Crawley Community Arts through the Hawth, which is where we're having the premiere of Noon of the Solstice.
Oh,
and
cool.
That film was shown in the very room where we're going to have the premiere.
Wow.
12 years ago or something, I think it was. Basically, it was part of a challenge to shoot a film in a weekend and do that. And we did that. And I wanted to do something that involved music, and I thought it'd be good to use Doe's music. And my brother-in-law was a member of Spiral Castle, and he helped me write the screenplay for the film. And I guess, thinking back after all these years, when it came to doing the movie, there were elements of doing that film which sort of came back to me. A little couple of images. I mean, it was a very cheap, very low budget, very simple film. It's still quite charming, but it's certainly not, you know, anything like this movie. But there were moments in that which kind of resonated over the years and sort of, you know,
images.
Just this little feelings. But there's some interesting trivia in that. Joy played the teacher, who is now playing Ceridwen in this movie. The guys who played the Horned God, the Oak King and the Holly King, are both in Spirit of Albion as well.
Oh, really?
In the Morrigan sequence. What, they're part of the stunt team that played multiple roles in that.
Superb.
And one of the little children that was being taken through the woods by the teacher is Charlie, who in the new movie plays Annie's lover, and his band have got two songs in the film as well. So 12 years on, the little boy in the film is now in bed with one of our leads.
No way.
You may remember the little boy saying, Jules, my mum's got someone her dressing table. Yeah. That's Charlie, he's got the band and he's in the film.
Wow.
So, and actually he appeared at Witchfield.
Don't go there. So, yeah. Don't go there.
Trivia time.
Don't you see, Esther? People don't change. All they do is just change what's around them.
Gary, the last time we spoke to you, we had a quick chat about how the songs for the film were chosen and the order was worked out and things like that. And one of the most powerful songs, I think they're all incredibly emotive
songs.
Yeah. But one of the most powerful songs for me personally is Only Human.
Yeah.
So we know why you chose it. I'd like to ask Dave, what went through your mind when you wrote that? Because Gary's pulled out some fascinating aspects of it.
Yeah. Okay, well, that song, that's one of the only songs I've written in anger, I think. I was watching, it's Kerry, I think you watched it as well, didn't you? The Panorama film. It was a Panorama movie, a documentary that was a scientist trying to show what it was that made us human beings, what separated humans from the animal kingdom. And there were lots of experiments and things on this program, as it was a scientific program. But one of the things they showed was an experiment that a scientist did to show what made us human. And what they did is they took two newly born chimps, one of which they gave love and cuddles and affection to, and the other they stuck in its room on its own and denied it any kind of touch, any physicality, any emotional content, you know,
that
everything.
Feels wrong, right?
They took the whole thing away from it. So, and this And obviously the one that got all of the love was fine, and the one that was denied all of this stuff, this newly born living life form on this planet, went utterly mad, and it was heartbreaking.
And I
thought, you, my friend, have just shown to everyone watching this film what separates us from the rest of the animal kingdom, because no other animal
would do that to another
living human,
absolutely,
living being, regardless, right? And so that's when I went in the other room, and I just grabbed my guitar, and I thought of the human's connection to the to various things, to itself, through the way that there is enough money in the world to solve a lot of our issues. It's just all in the wrong place.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, that there is this kind of animal testing thing that we are quite happy to, you know, test on other living beings, as long as it makes us live longer and stuff. And then at the end, you know, the touch on religion, which is, you know, there's only one God, and, you know, none of us can prove he exists, and Richard Dawkins had loved me hearing that. But so,
oh,
he's, but, you know,
changed his opinion. So
has he? He's a,
yeah,
he's
now officially an agnostic.
Agnostic, fair enough. Well, one day we'll join hands in a circle up on the Longman with Richard Dawkins.
Absolutely.
He's on his way. But do you know what I mean? You know, just step by step, and he'll get there, you know.
I can totally
but the bottom
understand
line is, that's what it was
there
all about. So, yeah, that was where it stemmed
when
from.
When it comes to the film, the anger isn't quite that blatant, is it? You spread it across the centuries more?
We spread it across, we spread it across the three characters in the film.
Yeah.
I mean, we gave... I mean, that song was the starting point, really, for the whole process in a lot of ways, and it gave us our three central human characters. You know, part of the process, I think we've said this before in the last the interview that you did, it's taking that song and deciding who it was that would sing
absolutely
those songs, where would that feeling come from? And we reverse engineered it back to find our characters. I mean, I guess their initial whatever anger, whatever you're going to call it, is now internalised in them and has come out in different ways. Each of them has their own response to it, you know.
I think I apologise. Each of the things that you've highlighted in the separate characters is all an aspect of humanity, though.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I think, in a way, I mean, without trying to sound too sort of big or grand about it, because it wasn't really this thought through, but in a way, the humans are kind of archetypes.
Mm.
You know, the three humans, they do represent different sort of aspects of the modern world, the things that trouble us these days. And I mean, that sounds a lot grander than it was actually thought through. When it came out, it just came out as a gut response.
Yes.
But often a gut response, when you look deep down into it, it does touch on bigger themes, because that's why it's a gut response.
And I think some of the youngsters we spoke to, they were very... Their performances, when they spoke about doing it at the Archway, were quite powerful. Yeah.
And they are a very bright bunch of young people, and they are a lot cleverer than me, and did a lot.
They were saying to us.
Frankly,
goes with me as well.
They were saying to us that, you know, they were very very angry in their roles, and they were much more emotive than comes across in the film. Whereas, and I think that probably goes right with the age group, to be honest.
It does, and also I think on stage they were angrier than in the film, because in the movie the camera's right in your face, so you can underplay stuff more. You internalise a lot more on film. If you played it on film the way you play it on stage, the whole thing will come over as ridiculously hammy.
Mm.
So I think the feelings are still there, they're just deeper inside, mm-hmm, in the film. And especially two out of the three in the movie, two out of the three of them had played it originally on stage, had originated those characters, and Emma, who plays Esther, came in at Witchfest, so they'd all played them on stage anyway,
mm-hmm,
so they'd lived with those characters for a bit, so they were able to internalise the feelings a lot more rather than playing the surface. And that comes over on film very, very powerfully.
Yeah,
And
it certainly does. I mean, certainly the bits that we saw,
you
know, it's a quite a powerful film and has a very strong message.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to affect everybody who sees it, certainly.
Well, it seems to have done the trick so far.
Yes.
It'll never last. Nothing ever lasts. Outside this place, everything's the same. Your life's still out there. My life's still out there. We'll just fall straight back into them again.
It's one of the things, I mean, as a filmmaker, one's always very nervous. You make a movie and you think, God, are people going to like this? Is it going to be, or is people sort of watch it and go, that's a bit stupid, or whatever, you know. But having been a stage show originally in two different incarnations, everybody who's seen the stage show has loved it, I kind of know the story works.
Yeah.
So now I've just got to make the film properly.
Sure.
From the outside, looking at individual jigsaw pieces, Those jigsaw pieces look amazing.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see the whole jigsaw put together.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it is exciting. I still, as we're going back, I still can't quite believe we're there. And I am.
What's the next step for you guys in terms of promotion of the movie? Where's it going? What are you doing?
Well, there's all sorts of things going on at the moment. I mean, from my point of view, I mean, word of mouth is always good. A lot of the people who are supporters of the film have been taking flyers and sharing on their Facebook pages and stuff like that, and that is the kind of current thing. Doing interviews like this, I did another interview for a radio show a few days ago, and
on Facebook, pop along there, make sure you press that like button, guys.
Like it and pop along to the website and
pre-order
a DVD. You've still got a couple of weeks or about a couple of days when this goes out. Pre-order the DVD or just buy it, be out. We're going to start upping the marketing a lot as well, and I'm going to hit some more magazines and things, you know, some of the mainstream magazines as well, hopefully some of the filmmaking ones.
And just
hope it sort of snowballs.
And don't forget
the
Celtic community.
Yeah.
Because this is a seller for those.
Well, I mean, anyone who's listening who thinks this sounds like a good idea, you know, get in touch, look in the show notes. There'll be the email to get in touch. Let me know and anything you need. There's a press kit. We've done an electronic press kit for this, if you need that. There'll be a link to that for you guys. So, you know, basically, just get in touch.
And is there anything, Dave, that you're doing further to help push the show
forward? I mean, last weekend was the first, you know, gig of April, and now I won't stop until end of November. So it's hitting the road with me, basically.
So if you get a chance to go and hear Dave sing, do,
because
then you'll hear the songs that are in the movie.
And we'll have the movie for sale at every gig from now on.
And you save the postage if you buy it.
That's right, you will.
Even better. Yeah. And so not only tour in this country, you also tour abroad, don't you, Dave?
That's right, yeah. Mid-May, heading off to Australia, and I'll be taking some of the DVDs with me there.
Excellent.
So we'll have them for sale in
Superb.
Australia. And I'll be playing in a couple of gigs in Adelaide, then we're off to Melbourne, Sydney, and then Brisbane. Hello, Spiral Dance. See you in a couple of weeks.
And we've got there's a showing in Prague, a cinema showing
That's
in
right.
Prague on the, what did you say it was, the 16th or 19th?
I think it's the 15th or 16th, but if you look on Facebook for
check in Facebook, there's a cinema showing in Prague coming up, there's
Excellent.
A showing in Germany coming up as well, there's a Northern premiere, which will go out a couple of days after you hear this, there's stuff everywhere. Just look on Facebook. That is the conduit of all information, the Facebook page.
And of course, there are premieres happening in all of your listeners' front rooms after they've bought the DVD.
Excellent.
Yes. Yes. Their own private premieres as well. Imagine that.
I still can't quite get my head around it.
They can all dress up as their favourite gods and watch it.
Fan art. That's what they want. Fan art.
So, jumping back to the movie.
Yes.
Jumping back to the movie.
Yes, someone thought too. Well done.
Well done, darling.
Jumping back to the movie, you've got a Welsh god in there. You've got an Irish god in there. We've got the Lord of the Wildwood, Hearn. And him. I wanted to talk about him.
Okay.
Because I would like to know how much of his character was influenced by Richard Carpenter's Robin Hood.
Robin O'Sherwood.
From the writing point of view, not a lot, I think. Especially because a lot of the youngsters who I worked with when we first wrote the script, half of them they were born after it aired.
Absolutely.
They don't really know it.
Yeah. Yeah.
They don't really know the character from that at all. You know, not like us more mature. We know and love it, you know, very deeply. And of course, within the context of the programme, he was a symbol. He wasn't actually a god, was he?
No.
He was a man who was symbolising the god.
See your god become man. An old riddle, my children.
So, in terms of the movie itself, I guess from the writing point of view, it wasn't influenced by that heavily at all. It was influenced more by the legends, by researching online, by looking into the character. In terms of the look, I know for a fact that Sean, who plays the character, he's a huge fan of Robin Sherwood, as am I, and I think there was an influence. But funny enough, I think the influence is more of Robin than of the horn, than of Hearn himself in the, mm-hmm. the look. He yeah. looks more Robin Hood than
that's true. Yeah.
And he does. I mean, take the antlers off and he could be the hooded man. I mean, it's but I think that's very appropriate as well. Because, you know, there are some legends that, you know, that say that the Robin Hood thing rose out of the legends of the green man, of you know, the horned man thing. It's all kind of interlinked. Yeah. So why not?
Well, they took him as Hearn's son.
Exactly, Hearn's son. So, I mean, and if we're being, you know, really pedantic about this, technically he's not necessarily Hearn in the film.
No,
he is the Horned God, he of many names.
Yeah,
as he is very keen to point out himself at one point in the film.
Yes, superb.
Yeah.
Close your eyes, feel it, Henry. Feel the divine in nature itself. Hear nature's call.
The reason we asked is because Sean actually brought it up, and we thought, and of course we saw the antlers and went, we've seen that before somewhere.
Yeah. We toned the antlers down a bit, otherwise it would have been impossible to walk through the trees without getting caught up.
Yeah,
that's
an image.
Yeah, that happened on one of the shoots.
There's another connection there as well, because Hearn's Apprentice, when I came up with that title, that is Robin Hood, you know. So, you know, you've still got that company.
Which is
another
question.
Which was a huge influence on me, you know.
Which that was another one of our questions.
Yes.
How much was that show and that whole period being an influence to your music?
Yeah, it was hugely.
It's all a circle, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a circle. I remember sitting there, you know, every Sunday, I think it was, or Saturday or Sunday evening.
I don't remember.
With my mum. It was a show that I could watch with my mum and dad. It was a family show, you know, and it was totally magical. And from the opening sequence of that Clannad song, when it first starts, and
it's
you just turn
amazing.
Around and you know, calm the hearts, ladies, but Michael Praed then turns around with, you know, it was just I think it laid the seed of the pagan heart within,
I think it did, for
many people, you know.
Yeah.
And I was one of them, definitely, you know. And that's when that debut album came out, that's part of the honouring of that, was, you know, Hearn's Apprentice.
And then when Joy and I got married, we had Lady Marian playing that as
did
when
you?
when we signed the register.
Right, yeah.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah. So yeah, it's kind of in all of us, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Thanks, Kit.
Yeah.
Nothing's forgotten. Nothing is ever forgotten.
Jumping back to the film again.
Oh, my Lord.
Yes, we probably should. That was your line, sorry.
jumping back to the film.
Yep.
Now, we've heard a bit about special effects and green screens.
Green
screens.
Green screens. I'd like to hear about green screens.
And green screens, etc.
Yes.
So you obviously used some special effects in the film.
Yes.
There are a few. I mean, it's not an effects-heavy movie. It's not Star Wars.
No.
It's not Lord of the Rings.
Glad to hear it.
It's,
apart from the T-Rex.
Yeah, yeah. Well, don't tell them about the T-Rex. Sorry. It's a surprise.
Don't give it away.
What a movie.
I think probably, you know, there are a handful of effects in the film. One of the songs, Pipes of Pan, was shot on a green screen because we wanted to do something sort of magical with the backgrounds of that song.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to lift it out of reality in a way. And I don't want to say more because it's a bit of a spoiler, but you'll see when you watch the film. And when you watch the film a second time, you'll understand more why I've done it than the first time.
Great.
I say no more.
Great.
Also, we also shot Lady of the Silver Wheel on the green screen because, quite frankly, we were going to create the inside of the Castle of Glass, the Spiral Castle, and, you know, you're not going to build a set on our budget. So, we shot that on a green screen and created the castle on the computer. And there are one or two other sneaky little hidden effects. Plus, there was just some other simple, practical, day-to-day, down-to-earth things. Like, you know, sometimes you're filming out on location, things happen, you get bits of dirt on the lens or whatever, and they needed removing. So there was a case of me sitting down for several evenings with a computer going, I'll get rid of that spot there, that spot there, frame after frame. 80 shots in the film needed dirt removal off the lens because of conditions that you're filming in.
Mm.
So I had to sit down and literally frame by frame go through and paint out dirt. So
that's
hidden effects.
That's
things that you've never noticed, I guess.
Yeah. Exactly. But, it's not an effects-heavy movie. We used them where we needed them. But, yeah, I'm not a huge sort of CG lover.
No.
So I like things to happen in camera as cool. much as possible.
And that's, I think, probably with the what the movie's about. It needs to be honest.
You want to feel that what you're seeing pretty much is in front of you, unless the moment is a kind of dreamlike, magical mm-hmm. moment, in which case the only way to do it is with our digital friends. But yeah, they are there for a reason. And I think they integrate quite well. I mean, I know you've seen a bit of it, but yeah, you haven't seen all the effects.
No, I haven't. No, they weren't.
How did you feel about it, Dave, looking at them?
Well, no, I barely saw the effects.
You've hardly seen any,
have you? No, when I saw the film, I was watching the actors working against the green screen. It hadn't been put in, so I haven't even seen it.
Oh, it's going to be exciting for you then.
Yeah,
oh,
that's right.
Gosh.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, we're all looking forward to the premiere then.
Yeah, me included. Yeah.
Superb stuff.
Yeah.
I think it's probably about time that we wrap this up, guys. Okay. One final question. I'd like to ask you both, Gary, what do you think you'll take away from the whole experience of making the movie?
God.
How has it affected you?
In lots of ways. I'm a lot poorer.
I wasn't going to go there.
Financially, but a lot richer spiritually. What have I learned? I mean, I've learned an awful lot as a filmmaker. I've learned an awful lot, but also as a person. I mean, if I'm being serious for a minute, I mean, I've always sort of teetered around the edges of the whole pagan sort of movement ever since I first came across Dave's music, and when I first met Joy, her brother was very much part of that community as well. So I've sort of tiptoed around the edges of it for a few years, but since sort of diving in about 2.5 years ago head first, it's now become so much a part of who I am, what I am, that I've you know, I can't remember what it was like before, really. I've found the whole thing has sort of enriched my this sounds so pretentious, but it's sort of enriched my soul, I guess, in a way. I mean, but it's become my sort of my world. I've lived and breathed it for 2.5 years. It's hard not to be affected by it, frankly.
Of course it is.
Yeah, it's changed my life.
I mean, the heritage completely. Of the Celts is in the very grass outside your front door.
Totally, and I mean, it has completely changed my life. I mean, there's no two ways about it. And on top of that, people I've met through the film. Some I've known a little bit, some I've known not at all. I now have deep, deep, close personal friends for life through making this film, you know, people. And, you know, how can you not love that? It's brilliant.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, that's what we're taking.
Absolutely.
Through. Yeah.
Thank you, Gary. Dave?
Yeah, Dave, I'm going to ask you the same.
Same question.
What would you take away from this? What can
you
take
what
away
have
from
you
this?
Are you taking away from it? How's it affected you?
Apart from selling the DVDs, of course.
Well, you know, I guess it's thinking back to when you wrote the songs, you know.
I didn't write them. No, that was you.
Wasn't it? Oh, really?
Gary writing them was a dream.
Yeah. You dreamt that.
Blimey. That's amazing. Okay, so thinking back to when I then wrote the songs, because I did think you wrote them, Gary.
Did you?
But obviously it was me. And, you know, when the old inspiration hits and you kind of come up with the ideas for the songs and the music and everything else, you know, part of what I want to do, not only to give these songs to the community, is also to take people on journeys, you know, visual journeys in your head. You know, I like songs that tell stories, and obviously the songs that were chosen for the film are those songs, like the Morrigan, the Green and Grey, Land, Sky and Sea, and these kinds of things. The people, you know, when people are, you know, so, you know, within the mundane life, that there's still magic in the world, you know. And so you listen to my aim was, when you listen to the songs, like for 5 minutes, 7 minutes, you're taken out of that and you're placed into an alternate, you know, to me, what the real reality is, which is where magic exists and those kinds of things. And I think that the film does that as well. You know, what it does is it will, for an hour and a half, people will be able to sit down and they will be able to watch a film that takes them out of that mundane life and hopefully reconnects them with magic.
Excellent.
And the other thing is, of course, that it's full of hope. And a lot of stuff on our TV screens isn't.
That's so
true. It's full of everything but hope. And I know in my heart there will be some very, very tough people who will not like this film because it's too, there's too much hope in it.
It's too positive.
Frankly, it's far too positive, you know. But that's the whole point, you know. And on the other hand, I think it will touch people. I hope it will touch people, and the message within it will also just, next time they go for a walk in the woods, they'll just have a bit more awareness of not just the green, but also, you know, those unseen worlds and the fairy and everything else that's around. So that's it.
Well said.
Yeah.
Well
said.
Thank you both.
What were you going to, Gary?
No, I was just going to say, I'll chuck something in here which you may not want to use if you want to. And
he's probably going to preempt our next question, isn't he?
Oh, go on. No, you do me the question first. I'll do my bit on the end just in case.
Because you two, so far, have preempt every single question
we've asked. Go on then, far away.
So, spill the beans. Is there going to be a Spirit of Albion 2?
It's not going to be called Spirit of Albion 2, but I can exclusively reveal on here at the moment, I am working on something called The Tales of Albion. Which is a direct follow-on project.
Excellent.
If you want to find out more of that, you'll have to keep an eye on the Facebook page where I'm going to start drip-feeding some information about that soon.
Oh, exciting
stuff. Let's
just
say, you may not have heard the last of these characters.
Excellent. Oh. Thank you, Gary.
Mm.
Is that going to involve Dave's music?
Yes.
Oh, is it? Oh, this
he doesn't. I was going to talk to him about this when we finished the interview. He doesn't know this yet. I brought my notebook with me.
We won't.
So, an
exclusive to me as well.
Thank you so much, both of you, for sharing a pint and taking the time to chat to us about The Spirit of Albion, the movie, in this wonderful pub, The Giant's Rest. And don't forget, the movie is available to buy from the 1st of May. It's available for pre-order now. And we look forward to seeing any of you that are going at the premiere.
Yay.
Thank you, both of you.
Thank you. Thanks for the pint.
Cheers.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, mate. That was a lot of fun. Thank you to Gary, the manager of the Giant's Rest, for allowing us to record our interview in the pub.
Yes, it's a beautiful pub. And if you come to visit the Long Man, make sure you grab a pint of Dave's favourite ale, Doombar, in it. You'll find some photos and more details in the show notes.
Now I think we should have some more music to finish the show. What do you think?
Yeah, that would round it off nicely. What about Blessings of Beltane by Kaer-Noos Rising?
Yes, that's a superb idea. Because George from Kaer-Noos Rising runs a charity called Art for Their Sake that paints murals on places like children's hospitals to brighten up the lives of those that are really poorly. And it would be nice to finish off by mentioning a charity, as we started by giving a shout out to Vivacity, the charity that manages Flag Fen.
Excellent idea. Check out the show notes for some pointers to see some of the astounding work that George and his team have done. We've even got a video there of the work that they've done in the Alderhay Hospital for Children.
Which is absolutely amazing, isn't it?
Superb. It's absolutely superb.
So let's have a listen to Blessings of Beltane.
Sunlight dancing upon a stream, webbed with pearls of dew. Blessings of color from flower and thorn above me, honey blue. And the first bird song from the meadowland, an inspirational sound, carried along by the morning breeze, waking all around. Bringer of summer and dancer of green, keeper of cauldron, diviner of dreams, maiden of flowers, lifter of veils, friend of my heart, teller of tales. Winter will teach the beauty of change, and nice twilight summer is here. She's back again with a fragrant embrace, rolled on the wheel of the year. So light up the fires of Beltane, the promise of Maytime once more. And we witness the dance of the maiden, just as the year before. Bringer of summer and dancer of green, keeper of cauldron, diviner of dreams, maiden of flowers, lifter of veils, friend of my heart, teller of tales. So light up the fires of Beltane, the promise of Maytime once more. And we witness the dance of the maiden, just as the year before. So light up the fires of Beltane, the promise of Maytime once more. And we witness the dance of the maiden, just as the year before.
That was Cernunnos Rising with Blessings of Beltane from the fantastic album Wild Soul.
And I think that sadly brings us to the end of this fun show, which we hope you've enjoyed as much as we've enjoyed making it.
Been a lot of fun, hasn't it? So we'd like to wish you many blessings and say
goodbye.
If you make any mistakes, Jim, what you're saying, just stop,
we'll
repeat, and just carry it on, and I'll edit it.
And
yep.
Put it in the outtakes on your show. I know you will.
No, I won't. I won't.
You'll put that on.
No, but I won't.
I won't.
Well, I might.
It's possible.
Which is only a couple of giant strides away from the chalk.
That'd be me switching off.
Right now.
I'll have another go.
Yes, time
one more, Mr. Andrews, and you're absolutely
well. Kerry will do your bit. Kerry.
You've been listening to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, available from CelticMythPodShow.com. We hope you've enjoyed the show and will stay tuned for the next episode. You can send us an email or some voice feedback to Gary and Ruth at CelticMythPodShow.com. The show notes for this episode can also be found on the website. We'd like to say a special thank you to Coulan's Hounds, who provided us with the theme music for our show. You can find them at www.sfhounds.com. We'd also like to say a big thank you to Anne Roos, Master Harper, and Keltoria, with a K, Celtic New Age Music, who have both given the show unrestricted access to their music. And thanks again go to Diane Arkinstone and Kim Robertson, whose music has been used as some of the transitions you've heard in this show. You'll find links to all of these wonderful artists in the show notes at shownotes.celticmythpodshow.com.